to talk about. Without a word, Tamara snapped her arm upward, breaking his grip on her shoulder, while simultaneously driving a knee into his groin. The man grunted like a ruptured airlock and doubled over. A couple of the men around the bar laughed. One of the women said,
"That's it, honey. Kick him where it hurts."
Nobody else thought much of the brief encounter. Tamara pushed her way toward the door. But now two burly, grim-faced men in dark suits grabbed both her arms.
"That wasn't polite, Ms. Duchamp," said one.
"You made our friend look bad."
"What is this? Who are you?"
"Never mind. Come along with us."
"No, I don't want to."
She struggled, but they began to drag her toward the door. The patrons of the bar watched. A couple of the men began to stir.
"Security police," announced the bigger of the two men dragging Tamara, who still struggled furiously to get free. "She's under arrest." "The hell she is."
Another man stepped out of the crowd to stand grinning before them. Tamara recognized him. Dan Randolph.
"Now look, buddy," said the bigger of her two captors. "You could get hurt pretty bad sticking your nose into what's none of your business."
"Let go of her," Dan said calmly. "If you're security police, let's see some ID. And an arrest warrant." The bigger man let go of Tamara's arm. Before he could take a step toward Dan, though, a really big man with the smooth-cheeked face of a child came up behind them and, grabbing them both by the backs of their necks, whacked their heads together with a resounding hollow thud that sounded like two billiard balls colliding at high speed. Down they both went, glassy eyes rolling back into their skulls. The crowd cheered.
"Thanks, pal," said Dan to Big George. He offered his arm to Tamara. "Shall we leave this den of depravity?"
She saw the weasel lurching toward Dan. He spun around, warned by her glance, and smashed an overhand right into the weasel's chin. He fell forward, flat on his face.
"Such violence," he muttered, turning back to Tamara. Taking her arm in his own, Dan turned briefly back to the onlookers. "If anybody finds a security ID on any one of these clowns, tell them my name is Dan Randolph. That'll make their day."
And he marched grandly out of the 100 G's, Tamara on his arm, Big George following him.
"What are you doing here?" Tamara asked once they returned to her quarters.
"Came to find you," said Dan, flexing the aching fingers of his right hand. At least he hadn't broken it.
Tamara's room was nothing more than a cramped compartment with a lavatory alcove in one of the buried shelters connected to the rest of the underground complex. Big George waited outside, guarding her door. Pops Tucker had remained at the bar, an inconspicuous little gnome, to see what developed when the three goons came to.
"Nice place you've got here," Dan said sarcastically. "Kate really put you in Siberia, didn't she?"
Tamara felt suddenly weak-kneed. She sat on the edge of her bunk. Dan was already astride the room's only chair.
"Who were those goons, anyway?" Dan asked. "Are you in trouble?"
"Yes, I think I am," she said,
surprised at how her voice fluttered. "From Kate?"
"No, from... it sounds melodramatic to say it, but I think they're from the Mafia."
"The Mafia?"
"Some variation of it. An international syndicate of organized crime."
"On the moon?"
"Why not? Who do you think you were doing business with when you were smuggling drugs into the city?"
29. Pops Tucker joined them at the cable car terminal on their way back to the Yamagata Hotel. None of the three men who had accosted Tamara had security identification on them. The crowd at the bar threatened to put them into one of the catapult cargo containers if they ever showed their faces at the 100 G's again.
"Rough bunch," muttered Dan.
"They had a hopper waiting for them. They're on their way to the city," Tucker said. "Maybe they'll be waiting for us."
Dan shook his head. "No, they'll slink off to their boss, whoever it is, with their tails between their legs. They don't know we're staying at the hotel."
"How can you be at the hotel?" Tamara wondered. "Your photograph, your retinal prints. Kate has spread them all over Alphonsus and the other settlements as well. How can you ride in this car without the security department recognizing you on the monitor cameras?"
They were alone in the cable car. This late at night, hardly anyone traveled between the Nubium facilities and the city. "Two safeguards," Dan said, grinning tightly. "One,
My wrinkled old friend here has hacked into the security files and transferred the photograph and prints of a long-dead mining engineer for my own. So the dumb computer is looking for a dead man, not for me.
But there are still people who might recognize you.
That's where the bribery comes in. Like the room clerk at the hotel when we checked in a couple nights ago. He knew something was slightly askew, but I tipped him enough to make him happy about it. Money talks, kid. It talks loudly. But when you want it to, it can whisper. Despite his avowed confidence, Dan was edgy and hyper-alert when the cable car reached its terminal in the city. Hardly anyone in the underground corridors at this time of night. They took a powered walkway to the hotel and went immediately down to Dan's suite. The sitting room was huge, ornately decorated with oriental carpets flown in from Earth and furniture made on the moon to resemble classic styles. One entire broad wall was a video window. Jabbing a finger toward a closed door, Dan said to Tamara, "You can have the master bedroom. Pops and George are sharing the other bedroom. I'll sleep out here tonight." Half an hour later, Dan and Tamara were sitting on the couch that would convert into his bed. Tucker and George had retired to their own room. A pair of brandy snifters stood on the coffee table before the couch. The room lights were turned down almost all the way. The picture wall was showing a video scene of a crescent Earth glowing blue and white in the infinite black sky above Mare Nubium.
"So that's how Kate caught you, I'm sure," Tamara was saying. "She was tracking the logistics program, looking for where the steady leaks are."
"While I was getting people to smuggle propellant for the hopper I snagged," Dan muttered. "I should have known better. Never leave a straight trail behind you."
"It was while Kate was searching the logistics files that I began to see how somebody was bleeding away 5 to 10% of the company's assets. That's when I began to suspect that there were criminals burrowing into Astro's business."
"And you told Kate about it?" Dan asked. She nodded solemnly.
"That's when she transferred me out of her office to the mass driver complex."
"So she's in on it."
"She must be."
"And she wasn't satisfied just exiling you to the mass driver. Those goons were sent to shut you up permanently."
Tamara shuddered.
"Damn." He smacked a fist into his open palm, making Tamara jump. "I thought it was Malik and his double-damn GEC bureaucracy. But it's an international syndicate of criminals that we're up against. Both of them."
"The crooks see the GEC's greenhouse project as an opportunity to steal on a global scale."
Dan shook his head. "It's more than that, kid. They've always been around, nibbling at the edges, like a pack of rats hiding in the dark, biting off what they can when you're not looking. We've had problems like that at Astro since I first got into business." Tamara smiled at him.
"For a while there, you were one of the crooks."
"Yeah, I guess I was." He got up from the couch and began pacing the big plush room. "But now they're organizing on a global scale. They're not after just money anymore. They wouldn't have to organize globally for that. They could just continue operating the way they always have." Tamara watched him striding, thinking out loud. "No, they're after power now," said Dan. "This greenhouse project is giving them the opportunity to focus all their efforts. They want to take over the GEC. That's what they're after." His eyes ablaze, Dan came back to the couch and sat beside Tamara once again. "That's what it's all about. They're letting Malik and the others on the council turn the GEC into an effective worldwide dictatorship. Then they take over the GEC. They'll be running the whole double-damned world."
"Do you really think so?"
"Hell yes. What do they care if half the world sinks beneath the waves? They'll control everything that's left."
"That's frightening."
"There's plenty to be frightened of. Anybody who gets in their way is liable to be killed."
"Like me,"
she said. Her voice small, hollow. Dan nodded.
"I'm scared, Dan. They want to kill me."
Tamara pressed close to him, close enough for Dan to smell the scent in her hair, to see into the depths of her jet-black eyes. She was trembling. So was he. She slid her arms around his neck and kissed him. Dan held her tightly, his mind spinning. His body reacted. Lifting her up in his arms, he walked across the big, shadowy, silent room, the glow of the distant Earth throwing highlights on her ebony hair, the classic curve of her high cheekbones, the sensuousness of her half-opened lips. Dan carried her into the bedroom and forgot about the world and all its cares.